Welcome to the best of TJN's science and technology interviews. You're invited to join us to listen to select researchers and scientists share their rarely discussed rediscoveries in science and technologies. The time is now to come forward in our brains and process the discoveries that can now be applied to assist us to master the days, months, and years ahead. So sit back and let your mind soar while your brain processes the best science news from our past that is very relevant to our lives today. Enjoy the best of TJN.
Well, greetings, everyone. How are you? And this is your favorite Melanology Hour. I am Dr. Jewel, your host, and with me, my fabulous co-host, Dr. T. Owens Moore. Hi, Tim. How are you?
Greetings, Dr. Jewel. Greetings, family. I'm doing quite well. Thank you for asking.
Well, good. Yeah, we're all here being hosted on the fabulous Jewel Network, Justifiably Enchanted with Enlightened Living on Blog Talk Radio. Today, we thought that we would talk about the effects of serotonin and melatonin because we really want you to have that foundational understanding as to what happens when the brain is exposed to light and when it is not. And these are the two main chemicals, substances, that are made that actually cause a profound difference in function and capability of the same brain cells. So without further ado, Dr. Tim, you're the neurophysiologist and the neuroanatomist, so why don't you give us just a simple rundown so everybody get your pad and pencil out as to what precisely we can know that serotonin does for us and what melatonin does for us and some of the unique characteristics about each.
Okay, well, I'd like to approach it by talking about this psychoneuroendocrinology of sunlight and darkness, because the molecules and chemicals you just spoke about function during different times of the day. That means that our bodies go through rhythms. We call those rhythms circadian rhythms, circa meaning around, cadian a clock, so we have like a 24-hour clock that our bodies are able to adjust to the environment. So without light, our bodies don't know that. So deep within the brain, there are elements or neuroanatomical structures that produce chemicals that help us to be entrained with the 24-hour cycle that our planet creates for us. So the chemicals you mentioned, one of them being serotonin. Serotonin is a chemical that primarily functions during the daytime. You mentioned melatonin. It's a neurotransmitter or neurochemical that primarily functions at nighttime. Well, they're very related because you need serotonin to make melatonin. So as we have this discussion this evening, we want to make sure that our audience knows that our bodies are constructed to basically manage those chemical elements, and melanin becomes an intermediary compound that makes sure that those chemicals are functioning right. One other chemical that we'll mention and talk about in the midst of serotonin and melatonin is sultriol. And sultriol, we're calling that vitamin D. Well, it's called vitamin D. It's a misnomer. They call it vitamin D in the literature, but we'll name it as sultriol. And it serves as a very important molecule that's being generated from the sun within the skin to help out with calcium absorption and also multiple functions to get our brains to think proper. So that's what we'll talk about tonight.
Okay, well, let's hear serotonin's story.
All right, well, if you think about serotonin, sera sounds like blood, tonin, adding some type of tone to the blood. You know, mm-hmm. They first found out about this chemical years ago that it had some possibilities to have an impact on blood vessels. Well, studying further, serotonin then becomes very important later on in life when we start to look at the way that we know that chemicals influence the brain. Serotonin became very important in mood disorders. Well, we know that it's produced primarily from deep within the brain, but one area that we've talked about periodically is the pineal gland. So serotonin as a chemical has been very important to help out with alertness. There's a deep system in the brain called the RAPHE system, RAPHE. The RAPHE system has these projections of neurons that flow up from the midbrain area up to the whole brain, and those neurons also produce serotonin. It's interesting about serotonin because the chemical that makes it is a very important amino acid. That amino acid is called tryptophan. So without tryptophan, you don't get serotonin. So now you have something coming from the diet that's important to make the neurotransmitter in the brain to work properly. So in terms of the history of serotonin, we've now moved to this whole realm of pharmacological treatment to assist with mood disorders like depression. So your most powerful antidepressant drugs coming from a medical pharmaceutical industrial complex are your serotonin reuptake inhibitors, drugs that boost serotonin and keep it in the system longer so it does not get reabsorbed back into the system. So serotonin right now is a molecule that's highly associated with mood disorders.
So what happens if it's rapidly absorbed back into the system?
Nothing really. It's really just a recycling program that the brain has to inactivate the compound. We have multiple chemicals within our body, in our brain, but they can't circulate all the time. So the body has its own mechanisms to deactivate them. One is enzyme deactivation. The other one is reabsorption. So the reabsorption or recycling is a natural process. The problem is people who are depressed or have mood disorders, they don't have enough of the chemical in the first place. So the drugs serve a purpose to whatever serotonin that may be there. It helps to keep it in the system longer. The problem is, as you know, as a medical doctor, many of these substances, these drugs for mood disorders, they really don't work in a day, a week, 2 weeks. They may take 6 weeks to have an impact, which means there's a whole lot of other phenomena going on. Some receptor issues, receptor changes. You now have the whole issue of, guess what, placebos work just as well as those serotonin reuptake inhibitors. So you have a whole lot of problems now with really trying to interpret what these drug effects are, but as a chemical itself, it has a natural way of, I guess, operating in the brain, and it does its thing. And when we get out of balance and we're out of tune with the realities of life, it then has an impact on our moods, and it disrupts our thinking. If you look at the structure of serotonin as a molecule, we've talked about this before, it looks just like lysergic acid diethylamide. What is that? LSD. So
right.
People who go on LSD trips, their minds are really activated. They are somewhere else, but they're right there. So you can think about serotonin as a molecule during the daytime assisting with proper thoughts. It's very important in terms of just balancing out behavior.
So now this is interesting because if you're saying that we need to have enough serotonin in the brain so that we do not become depressed, are you saying that if you have excessive amounts of melatonin in the brain, that melatonin is going to make you depressed because it has many of the opposite effects of serotonin?
I wouldn't say that. And now we can go ahead, if you're going to ask me the question, well, how about melatonin? You haven't asked that question yet.
Right. Okay.
How about
melatonin?
All right. Melatonin is made from serotonin, as we just discussed. So without the conversion of serotonin being broken down, it does not make this chemical called 5-methoxy-N-acetyltryptamine. What is that? That's just melatonin. So essentially in the brain, there's mechanisms that are triggered as a result of light changing. So when the light changes, now you have some internal changes in your enzyme systems and the conversion of the chemicals that serotonin converts into melatonin. So melatonin then serves a purpose at nighttime. Now, what does it do? In animals, we first noticed that this melatonin lightened the skin or lightened the outside appearance of, let's say, amphibians, like frogs, like tadpoles. Wow, so this chemical has a powerful effect. So that's why I named it melatonin. Melanin, tonin, tone. It's adding tone to the melanin. Well, it's lightening the skin. Okay, we talked about this before. Melatonin is being released when? At nighttime. At nighttime, the regular ultraviolet rays are not being emitted because it's now dark, but the body needs the light. So the skin lightens at nighttime by the melatonin working and allows more light to get in through to do its purpose. Now, beyond the light that's getting in for its purpose, melatonin has multiple roles. It doesn't just do that. Guess what? It also inhibits reproduction. So when it's high, the amounts are high during certain seasons in animals, like sheep. Sheep. Breeding animals that breed during certain times of the year. It lowers their gonadal output of their hormones, which then lessens the opportunity to reproduce. So melatonin acts as a like inhibitor of reproduction. We don't say that in humans because we know we make love and we have sex and we make babies all year round. But for animals, it's noticed that there's seasonal breeders and the melatonin suppresses the reproductive system so that the animals then can go about their way. So,
okay, but I think this is important. I just want to just insert this real quick, though, Doc, because we need to look at this. And, you know, of course, that really heightened my ear as a retired or my past career of obstetrics and gynecology. So, again, you're saying to me that perhaps many women who appear to be unable to reproduce, that one of the things that really should seriously be looked at as should be their melatonin level, because they may have elevated melatonin levels, and because that correlation in animals has not been closely looked at in humans, this may be one of the main factors that may be responsible for occult infertility. What do you say?
Possibility. I do have some books and documents to talk about, you know, melatonin from different perspectives, different angles. We already talked about seasonal changes, and one of the main things that people talk about in humans that goes beyond reproduction is the issue of circadian rhythms and jet lag.
Right.
So those who are going through time zones and feel really, what do you say, slow and sluggish as a result of going through the time zones, melatonin is taking supplements are supposed to assist with rebalancing the system. Now, there's documentation about humans, melatonin reproduction, but you have most of it in the animal population. I have documents not thoroughly on top of it, but there's a book called Melatonin and the Promotion of Health. It is by this guy named Ronald Watson, and he has a whole chapter on melatonin reproduction. It is primarily dealing with humans because it deals with human breeding, menstrual cycles, melatonin and contraception. So whatever you have noticed over the years as a medical doctor and giving advice or seeing how it could have anti-gonadotropic effects, yeah, there's a possibility that maybe stress could be triggering melatonin to be functioning a certain way, shutting down the menstrual cycle, shutting down ovulation, shutting down reproduction. So there's a host of issues that could be probably happening.
Okay, but now let's go back because this is really important. And the reason why I say it is, but let me ask one more question. The promotion of health, is this gentleman who wrote this book, is he a medical doctor? Does he reveal that he is or not?
Yes, he's a PhD and pretty much just a researcher.
Okay, now the reason why I ask that is because in my training, and unless they've changed this, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, melatonin levels were never something that was requested as a standard workup for an infertility problem. That was never, ever considered. So I'd be interested to really know, you know, where his research was done and how he decided to extract blood samples, or how did they do this to determine its relationship in humans, because if he was able to demonstrate that, it never got any further than his work. It has not, to my knowledge to date, been introduced as a serious factor to contemplate in a infertility workup.
Well, let me say this. In 1999 publication, he's just the editor of other people writing articles on their specialization. In their specialization, as they write the article, they then have multiple research projects that then lead them to an idea. And this is what it says about the melatonin and anovulation, that is not being able to have an ovulation. Elevated levels of melatonin have been implicated in anovulatory states. In functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, melatonin levels are increased in comparison to normal cycling women. In a study of women with functional hypothalamic amenorrhea, the intravenous administration of large doses of estrogen reduced nocturnal melatonin. This suggests that high melatonin levels result in a situation of depleted estrogen. So, yes, there are studies that people are able to manipulate. And as you said about doctors don't take these types of assays, I sat in a medical school class in the early, in the mid-80s, and the doctor, medical doctor who was teaching these medical students, talked about the pineal gland, and don't worry about it, it doesn't do too much.
Exactly. That was the whole point that I was bringing out. On that note, you are listening to the Melanology Show. This is your host, Dr. Jewel, and your co-host, Dr. T. Owens Moore, and we're being hosted on the wonderful Jewel Network, justifiably enchanted with enlightened living, dedicated to broadcasting the science of life and the science of living on Blog Talk Radio. So if we can just rush back to that real quick, you just joined into the show. We've been talking about two important substances in the brain, serotonin and melatonin, and we have been talking about melatonin momentarily, and we've talked about the fact that in animals we know that the level of melatonin determines across the board the reproductive capability of the animals, which is why their capacity to reproduce is cyclic relative to the amount of melatonin in the brain relative to the daytime, nighttime cycles of the seasons. In humans, however, that has been noted that there are correlations between the levels of melatonin and the levels of estrogen that would allow a woman to menstruate or not, which is obviously, as you know, the end result after ovulation, which is a sign of ovulatory capabilities. And as I was sharing with Dr. Moore, at the end of my career in obstetrics and gynecology, still the standard of assessing the amount of melatonin in a woman's blood was definitely not a standard test to do for infertility. And you have to understand how important this is, because we have so many individuals, especially individuals who are melanin recessive, that rely heavily on taking ovulatory stimulating drugs. That not only would they release one egg, but they release 5, 6, 10, or 12 eggs at a time. And would these drugs really be necessary if they really did more thorough assessments of what really seems to be the underlying origin for the infertility? Because if this is something so simple as elevated melatonin levels, there's a lot of natural ways and even lifestyle habits that can easily lower that and bring that into balance. Is that correct, Dr. T?
Yes, that's correct.
This is very interesting, because just as you heard, if you're just tuning in, Dr. Moore will share with us that even sitting in medical school watching physicians teach other physicians that their respect and appreciation for pineal gland chemical and hormonal activity, neurotransmitter activity, is really not highly regarded. Is that correct?
Yeah, see, that's what led me in the area of melanin research. I mean, I was trained as a biological psychologist, so for me, I knew a lot about the brain, about how it produces behavior. I knew about the chemical elements, so for me, it was easy to follow along, but with me having extra reading on the side, and then to hear this medical doctor tell future medical doctors that don't worry about this, it really was shocking, because I'm like, these are the people going to potentially treat me in the future. And you
right.
Don't worry about it. So
exactly.
I just felt as though it was important to just start sharing some form of knowledge, not to be too over people's heads, but to let them know that there's a lot of information out there that we need to be able to digest to proper, you know, manage our ways through this life.
Exactly. And how important that is, that all of you ladies out there that may be concerned about your reproductive capabilities, and you may even be in the process of having a infertility workup, which is expensive, and it can be quite laborious. It takes a while, a long time, and you can now begin to help yourself by making sure that if you're going to pay for all these tests and have to wait for the results, et cetera, that they've actually done complete testing or the correct testing. If they have not assessed your melatonin levels, okay, which to me, they're going to have to take some time in doing that because they do change throughout the day and throughout the season, then the results are not going to be accurate as to the really reason why you're infertile. And the resort is going to be obviously asking you to take drugs that are really something to really consider, because I'm going to say this to you now, and that what normally happens is that when these women now have multiple release of eggs due to these ovarian stimulating drugs, they, depends on the hospital structure, its administrative structure, have to sign documents, or they are warned that they most likely will have multiple pregnancies, and they're asked, how many of the children do they want? Now, this is not publicized because, you know, of course, the Rights of Life people and the anti-abortionists and, you know, all these organizations would just go berserk and just really go to Washington and every place else. So it's really kept under wraps again. But these women, they do know that they're going to be asked how many of the fetuses do they want to bring to fruition. So she has five fetuses that are growing in her uterus because they stimulated all these eggs to be released, and she decides that she only wants two children. They will transuterinely destroy the remaining fetuses.
Mm-hmm.
And there are procedures that do that, and so therefore the fetus, once they inject it, you know, transuterinely, they'll do this through the uterus, et cetera, they will actually atrophy, obviously, and the other two viable fetuses, ovums, will then go on to full development. But I do want you to know that this goes on, and this is why this information is so important in this show, because if melatonin levels were really taken accurately like they should, et cetera, then just lifestyle changes, dietary changes, et cetera, even some psychotherapy support, as Dr. Moore has said, in relationship to stress, that all of this can change so that they can go on to a normal reproductive cyclic process, and a mother doesn't have to ever have the psychological concerns about the choices she had to make because she used artificial means of ovulatory stimulants to create an ovulation, multiple ovulations, that she basically rejected them. So you have to understand, and, you know, this is obvious proof that these things are happening, because those women who say, no, you know, I've got seven fertile ovums here, and, you know, we're just going to work with it and carry seven babies, which they have done, okay, the reason why they've done that is because they decided not to terminate any of the viable ovums that were created from artificial stimulation of the ovary. So, again, I just want to stress to you how important it is that you really listen to us as we share this information. You have a body. It is an intricate, wonderful organism, and you have a brain to be able to navigate it at all levels. All you need is the information. So the Melanology Show imparts to you part of your owner's manual for a human body. That's what we're doing. So listen closely. So tell us some more about this melatonin. So we know, for one, that there may be definitely a question about getting proper evaluations of the levels of melatonin for important life-changing activities such as fertility. Anything else?
Well, I'd just probably like to expound on what you already stated about what you've created and tried to present for the audience and the world, really. Mm-hmm. Because what we're trying to talk about is that people have control over their lives. Many
right.
of us wait for someone else to say what we should take, what we should do. When you have all the knowledge within yourself and around you to control how your health can be, and the people who are treating us most of the time have no clue, because they've been trained in a way to just give you things rather than assisting you with what went wrong in the first place so we can now find what balance. So there's multiple studies right now. You can go to websites. You can go to research articles where the drug companies are funding the drug research. Therefore, the drug results are going to favor who? The drug companies.
The drug companies, yeah.
You continually have problems with drugs that are now taken off the market because they're killing people. One case in point that was this week, the diabetes drug. Starts with an A. Not quite sure what it is. Avitin. Someone can check it out and look at it. But they've taken that off the market because it's giving people cardiovascular problems. So as you've tried to present to the audience and the world, we have control over understanding the biology, the psychology, the spirituality of our existence. And once that's done, we now can then not look at these terms like melatonin, serotonin, melanin, sociol as complex terms. No, the reality that we experience every day. So as neurochemicals in our brain, the melatonin and the serotonin help to provide balance. What does the melanin do in the middle as an intermediate? It helps to regulate that. So now you understand why we then may have some misconceptions or avoidance or ignorance in the scientific realm, because the people doing the research, many of them aren't what? Melanated. So why would they talk about something that they don't understand or experience? That's the deep part about what we're presenting. We understand it. We experience it. So it's easier for us to parlay to the community.
Now, Dr. T, now you know that everybody is black on the inside. And so we have to recognize the fact that obviously if you are an example. If your farm is 5,000 acres and my farm is only 500 acres, okay, the capacity for you to have a greater understanding of what it takes to handle vast amounts of produce, cropland, et cetera, obviously is 100 times greater than mine. However, I do have a little basic knowledge about what it takes to raise a crop, 500 acres of land, and what that looks like from that perspective. So it's not as though across the board the melanin recessive individuals have really no understanding of the activities of melanin. Their limited capacity, though, has been the major factor that has caused them to spend so much time and so much money in paying and being the originators of most of the research on melanin. However, we do know for a fact, too, that the amount of melanin also allows you to be able to interact with a greater range of frequencies from the electromagnetic spectrum than not. So the more melanin you have, you can easily interact with more subtle, short-range, or longer-range frequencies of light, which all contain knowledge when you have vast amounts of melanin versus individuals who do not. But they can still know, but it takes actually dedication and devotion, which, stimulates increased melanin production in these individuals. So they're black on the inside, but I will say that their judgmentalness about melanin in relationship to what they perceive is not accessible by just looking at their skin or their eye color inhibits full performance of the amount of melanin they do have on the inside. Every gene, I don't care what amount of melanin you exhibit on the skin and the hair and the eyes, is covered by melanin. Every chromosome is covered by melanin. Every nucleus of every cell is covered by melanin. So they are melanated on the inside, but their judgment about melanin and their limited expectation of what they think it does obviously does not allow this polymer, this huge macro polymer, to express its capability because it is pure consciousness also. So let me just interject that you are listening to the Melanology Show. I'm your host, Dr. Jewel, my wonderful co-host, T. Owens Moore. We are here today on the Jewel Network, just five and enchanted with Enlightened Living, hosted by Blog Talk Radio, talking about melatonin and serotonin, daytime, nighttime chemistry. So, Dr. Moore, I mean, you know, what do you think about that? Because, you know, you can have just a little bit of something, but if you focus and you concentrate and you really come to recognizing what you have has to provide for you everything that you want to achieve, you know that it will do that. The question is, most of the researchers who are melanin recessive don't come to this type of investigation with that level of openness and receptiveness to just be shown. Is that correct?
And that's absolutely all I was saying about is your perception. I mean, most of the research we have in the first place comes from the melanin recessive individuals, as you expressed. What
right.
We know about the pigment cell research really comes from Japan. You know, you got a lot of non-African people looking at the pigment melanin and the research that extends from that. I'm just trying to say that there's an understanding of how can you talk about something in its deepness, its most thoroughness, if you have your perceptions of, well, this is a bad thing anyway. If your perception of it is these individuals who have this, it's a waste product anyway. So in the mind,
exactly.
It then becomes a limitation in how you're interpreting it. So we're not
exactly.
in any disagreement there. I'm just trying to heighten it by saying, as we depend upon others to define a reality that is not ours, we then become limited. So we then, with this program, we're trying to get individuals to understand the importance of the, not just a chemical, but this biological product of life that all life products have and need. So we're not in any disagreement on that. I'm just trying to heighten the fact that we have medical scientists today that, again, would not prefer to talk too much about concepts that don't relate to their reality.
Right, and this is why this show also, 100% agreement with you, Dr. Moore, is so important because the 21st century is going to require that the researcher's attitude now become one that is totally open to allowing the substance, the organism, to reveal itself to the researcher. Now, listen to me very, very carefully, world, because that is a whole different attitude about approaching biology from an investigative awareness. Most investigators have been indoctrinated to decide that they want to know X, Y, and Z, and they go in here and they take, you know, human specimens, animal specimens, plant specimens, and they go in already with an attitude about this is what I want you to basically show me and this is how I'm going to approach you to do this. Now, this comes back, still we're talking about serotonin and melatonin, because one of the things that I've noted, and that's why I refer to myself as a nighttime scientist, even though I've been trained very well in standard scientific investigation, is that when I decided that I would not, you know, beat my specimen down or decide anything about the specimen, but allow the specimen to show me about itself, then that's when I started being able to have knowledge about things and connect the dots that most of my colleagues have not been able to do, or it takes them 20 years to do that. When the specimen could have shown them that in day one of their investigation. And why did that happen? Because they have not and did not accept the truth about quantum physics. Because quantum physics goes in and makes and teaches us that we all are coming from the same source, the electromagnetic spectrum, which is light. And that light literally composites itself in all ways. Your desk is made out of light, your pencil, your pen, also your bones, your teeth, the hair on your head, the car that you're driving. And quantum physics shows us that based on the state of consciousness that these particles come in contact with will totally create a reality that if people are not aware and stand in the understanding that everything comes from one source, they will assume that all these different things are coming from different origins, and they are not. We also know from quantum physics that all energy contains information. So anything that is in front of you material-wise, even though the book doesn't walk and talk, etc., and the dog does, the book has as much information just in that it's a book, not just because what somebody printed on the page, but the book itself is consciousness, just like the dog. And so just like there are people that talk to animals, you can actually contemplate on a book and basically find out what's in it and not have to look at every word. Now, how do we know that is true? Well, there's a quantum physical mechanism that is actually being taught now. You can pay to learn. It's expensive, but it's wonderful how it works. It's called photo reading. Did you hear what I said? Photo, meaning light, picture, reading. And what they teach you to do is to use areas of the brain. We want to talk about subconscious, et cetera. They teach you how to access the scanning areas of the brain that deal with all frequencies of light. Dr. Moore can confirm to you that that area of the brain is known as the midbrain, where the pineal gland sits, and you have the reticular activation system. You have all of these areas in that midbrain that when you allow the midbrain to read the book, now check this out. This is awesome. When you allow the midbrain to read the book, all you have to do is open the page and just look at the page and move to the next page. You don't have to acknowledge really any word. All you have to do is look at the page, next page. If there's keywords, for whatever reason, your eye will fall on them. As I'm looking at this book, governmental, malillumination, outdoor living, and I'm just turning the pages here. And what they have tested and found is that the person literally always gets the gist of what the whole book was saying. So these people read 18 to 20 books a day because they let their subconscious read it, which is what? The pineal gland, the pituitary gland. Those are the glands that resonate with all of these frequencies of light, and that those glands in our head are reading all of this information. They're not relying on the optic nerve, the eyeball. And they're reading 18 books a day, and they are tested on every book. They have conferences, worldwide conferences, where you can go and get really tuned up even, refined on how to do this. And you have to take the test after every book so that you can know at the end of that conference, usually they're a week long, what your accurate capacity to read is. And so if you read 18 books a day, you will then be taking 18 exams. And if you are able to qualify for 80% and answer 80% of those questions, then now you are an 18 book per day reader because you are letting the melanated areas of the brain that articulate all of the electromagnetic spectrum, not just what we've been told about is just the visual light spectrum. The pineal gland sees ultraviolet radiation frequencies. It sees long-wave radio waves, short-wave radio waves, TV waves, infrared, laser, etc. The inside of your brain, everybody's brain does that. But this society does not yet teach us how to use this area of the brain because obviously it can give you an intelligence that allows you to be able to read 18 books a day. So we want to talk about the school system, okay, but now how many school systems are using the photo reading technique that allows those children with their little midbrains to be able to read that information? Because in 8 years, they can have finished college and probably a master's degree, and they can move on to having big fun in college. I mean, and by the time they go to high school. So I'm saying that this is the technology that is available now, our 21st century, but you have to understand how the brain, the body works, and that is what the Jewel Network is here to do, to give you the science of life and living. Dr. Moore, myself, we have many other individuals who are joining the network, and we want you to know what we were put through the hoops to learn, and then we found out a lot of stuff wasn't even correct. Is that right, Dr. Moore?
Yeah.
And so, right, we had to go back and clean our brain out and get to the real deal, and we recognized that, you know, we love life. That's why we did this from the beginning, and we recognized that what is being handed out to people can compromise that, and we are not going to be a part of it.
I teach one of the hardest classes in the department, and I have students this summer taking it, and I have one student that sits in the back of the class, and there's not really that many students, so she doesn't need to do that. But for the final, I went ahead and made some questions up, and I went over the questions with the students where they have to go over the questions, and they have to answer the question, and I try to find out the thinking of why they're getting the questions wrong, trying to teach deductive reasoning, you know. Just one scenario related to what you just said about light and reading. The sister who sits in the back of the class was reading one question, and two answers she said were the same. Now, she's saying on my test, two of the answers were the same. I'm like, one of them was, she said was hypovolemic, because we're talking about thirst. And she said the other one was hypovolemic. I said, no, I would have done that. So I looked at the test question that she read. It said hypervolemic. The other one said hypovolemic. Now, there is no hypervolemic in the discussion. It's hypo. But she thought it was the same word. She says she doesn't see well up close. That's why she's sitting in the back of the class.
Oh.
You get that whole dynamic of our students, our people, just people in general, taking tests, missing things.
Mm-hmm.
As I have my students reading the questions, this is more than just her reading. Some students are reading the wrong word. They said something and say, are you sure? Oh, no, it's not that. So if I'm not going over that with them, they're reading on their own, they're seeing something different. That's just a classroom experience. There's a new movie out called Shutter Island. I don't know if you've seen that.
That's with Leo DiCaprio, right?
It's played just like Beautiful Mind.
Uh-huh.
Okay? Both stories dealing with someone who is in their mind having an experience, but no one else around them sees that experience because they're making this up in their mind. So when you talk about the mind, it can take you places that you never thought you'd be able to go. So people who then have this disordered thinking that you saw in The Beautiful Mind, you saw in Shutter Island, their minds were really making something up that they thought was really there. So when you deal with these chemicals that are in our brain, melatonin is primarily at nighttime. What is happening at nighttime? You're sleeping and you're dreaming. In your dream state, things happen that you don't know sometimes if they're real or not real. So some people wake up in a frantic state because they don't know, is this real or not real? But it's those chemicals being exhibited at that time period that's causing that. So you might then look at those individuals who may be having those, like Beautiful Mind or Shutter Island experiences, something's going on there in the brain that's causing that.
Now, you know, Dr. T, Dr. Tim Owens-Moore, you have stepped on so many toes here, and I'm going to just tell you about these toes and which ones you have stepped on. I do definitely want to make it clear, however, that there is definitely a thank you. There definitely is a standard of functionality of the brain where everyone should be able to be cohesive in accepting that we are, at this point, at this moment, seeing and interpreting the same thing. However, and see, this is the nighttime scientist in me that has to step forward and talk about the fact that we have to have far more standardized research done on the basics of how the average brain works, because many people are being born naturally hardwired to be able to transmit frequencies of light that most people cannot and do not interact with because the brain has not been trained to do so. Now, in the past, we've called these people clairvoyants. They were clairvoyant. They were clairsentient. They were clairaudient. And so we just kind of, you know, shoved them off in the corner and said, well, you know, we don't know why they can hear these things and know these things, or we don't know why they can do these things. And I'm sure Andrew Geller can tell you what a horrible life he had until he could actually demonstrate to people that, you know, I do have the capacity to align myself with the consciousness of something else. It becomes me, and it does what I say. So that's why I can literally levitate the cup. So having been born, Dr. Moore, with these capacities of sorts, I recognized that I was always having to deal with keeping up with two different levels of reality. And I say to you right now, that unless an individual has the capacity to identify and declare that they have built in their brain the capacity to perceive matter at a different frequency, it's just like an individual who is born tuned in to CNN, and another individual is born to be able to see all of CNN, HBO, and stars. Now, the CNN individual cannot have a discussion, cannot refute, cannot argue with the individual who's telling you that I am looking at X, Y, and Z, because they are now able to see everything that's happening on the star channel frequency. The other person isn't wired for that. So all they can do is basically accept that discussion unless they want to then train their brain so they can change the channel also. And this is something that still has not been broached in the science of psychology, psychoneuroimmunology, neurobiology, etc., even though we're beginning to move into that area with tracing brain wave patterns. What frequency is the brain oscillating at when you are, you know, doing mathematics versus when you're reading versus when you're relaxing? When we stop acting like the issues that are constantly being shown to us in the X-Men series, many of you think that that is not an issue. It is an issue that individuals who have been hardwired to be able to interact with the electromagnetic spectrum beyond the visual light spectrum have knowingnesses, and they have capabilities that the individuals who are only hardwired for visual spectrum awareness perceive as aberrant, a mutation, a freak. That is not true. And what I'm stressing here is that individuals who are only hardwired to be able to interact in awareness with visual light can train the brain. There are ancient methods, and this is what has been happening in China, in Tibet, in Kemet, in India. So these individuals who are able to do all these exceptional things, hang themselves up by nails and all this other stuff, et cetera, they're able to interact with matter at a different frequency of light, a different frequency of vibration, where the perceptions and the interaction with their body is not the same as those individuals who are hardwired only for visual light capabilities. Now, obviously, the question in my mind is, what does our pineal glands look like? Well, how much melatonin is in my bloodstream as a person, for example, that may be born as clairvoyant, a person who's clairaudient? Don't you think that Beethoven obviously was clairaudient? No question about it. Anybody that can write a full-blown symphony and be dead, you know, just be as deaf as a desk is clairaudient. What was his melatonin levels? What was his serotonin levels, et cetera? And so the visual light band of awareness for the majority of people, they weren't even able to appreciate the uniqueness of the possibilities that he offered, the possibilities that Andrew Geller offers, and be humble enough to ask, say, well, let's get, you know, some basic standards on you. Let's do a spec scan on you and see what your brain looks like, et cetera. None of these things. Most of the scientific community literally wants to act like the individuals in X-Men, and they want to basically contain these individuals or destroy their extrasensory capabilities because, of course, the unknown frightens them because they have never been taught that that's why we're here, is to make known the unknown and not to be frightened, but to ask for guidance so that they can also have the same experience. And it's no different, Dr. Moore, as you know, for those great inventors, Henry Ford and, you know, agriculturalist, I'm looking at his Carver, all of these people. You know, they talk to the plants. They have these special relationships with matter, and people begin to look at them in an aberrant way instead of asking, okay, well, how do you do this? And obviously it's innate for them, and they may say at first they don't know, but then that then puts the question on their mind that I do want to know how I do what I do. That was a big motivator for me, that when I touch living tissue, it makes a picture in my forehead. Everybody has a silver screen, just like the one that's in the movie house. So the silver screen that's in the movie house is the same, is a representation, a mirror reflection of what someone knew or had envisioned was a potential to show a lit moving object. But they may not have even known that they were actually creating a huge replica of the silver screen in the prefrontal cortex. The way that the neurons are wired, it allows you to be able to image. It's a silver screen, literally. And I don't know if the individuals who are able to visualize this way ever thought about, you know, I need to really figure out why in my brain I can do this. Well, for me, that's what I wanted to know. Why could I actually touch something that I couldn't really see, but I could see it very vividly in my brain.
How did you analyze the movie Green Mile?
Well, you know, I had a lot of compassion for that gentleman. And the reason why I had compassion for him is because there was a time in my awareness where I was also very, very frightened of my capability. I was very frightened about it. And so, therefore, you know, I really was always wondering if I was sane, if I wasn't, because of the things that I could see, the things that when I touched them, the information that could come out of them. And when I saw how frightened he was of this capacity to transmit huge mega amounts of light and light force energy into anything that he literally put his mind on, I was like, oh, yeah. And he's in an environment like this where, you know, people have so many issues. They're, you know, issues, they're frightened of color, they're frightened of size, they're frightened of, you know, if you're male or female, the place that you have to occupy versus my place. So, I mean, you know, these very limited interactions with the environment, when you see these kind of places that seem to be very bigoted and they seem not to basically accept change and differences easy, what they're really telling us, as you know, is that the neuronal communication, how these neurons are touching with each other in the brain, is limited, that they have hardcore, hardwired neural nets, and that is where the majority of the electromagnetic impulses circulate. And the other areas of the brain, yes, you can see little sparkles and whatever else, but nothing is really happening on a regular basis, only in certain areas. And so, therefore, we see these very limited behavior patterns and belief systems come out of people who are like that. So, in relationship, again, to the gentleman in the Green Mile, I was like, wow, if he just had more information about how he was hardwired and make a decision that this was not a curse, but that it was actually a gift, he could have done all kind of wonderful things. I mean, even to the extent that, like I said, that it was really interesting how people who knew that he had a fabulous gift, how they still, in their own fear, and I think perhaps even jealousy, would not honor him. Okay, and that was what the whole story was about. That's how I perceived it, that, you know, Tom Hanks, you know, he had to live the rest of his immortal life in guilt and shame because he knew that this was a phenomenal person, that he literally had come into contact with a god. And because of his color, because of his conditioning, that he did not treat him with the respect that should have been given to him, this person ended a whole cycle of pain and dysfunction for him just by one touch. And he knew that he did not do the highest by him, not at all. So his giveaway was to obviously keep the only friend that he could have because he was immortal, was the rat that he healed. You know, some disturbed mind in the prison was jealous and, you know, his rat ran off to get a crumb of bread somewhere else and he killed it. And he was able, because Tom Hanks was willing to give him his rat back dead, he resurrected the rat. And they killed the gentleman who had all the wonderful gifts. They destroyed the electrical system in the town to override his capacity to conduct electricity in doing so, which he knew that was incorrect. The wife of the warden who was just about dead, he raised her from her deathbed, et cetera, and all she could do was give him what to him was a meaningless necklace. It might have had a lot of value to her, but she obviously knew it didn't help her. So she passes on something to him that, why is it going to help him? Instead of making sure that he was pardoned and released. Because they knew for a fact that how could this person kill those two girls when everything he touched came to life. See, that was what was so interesting about the Green Mile. In that he was able to do what he did, automatically proved that he could not kill them. And that's what he said. He didn't do everything he touches. This has been his nightmare. Everything he touches, it becomes more enlivened. And they wouldn't stand up for truth. And this is the problem that we're facing today. This is why you're listening to the Jewel Network, because I am not going to not tell the truth when it comes to life. That's why we teach the science of life and the science of living on the Jewel Network, because you have a fabulous machine, a fabulous organism known as a physical body, and you have the right to know just as much about it as you want to know, and we are not going to withhold any information from you. The more we can get from the professionals who really know, the Jewel Network will make sure that you have access to that. So that's what I think about it, Dr. Moore, that, you know, he basically because of his fear of the fabulous gift that he had, created just a horrible life for himself. And having been there to a lesser degree, I had to make peace with the fact that, you know, we just were not going to live in fear of this capability anymore. So I can just end on this, that this is one of the med students that scrubbed in with me. They used to get so upset with me when they scrubbed in with me because I did not have to make these gaping incisions because I could see what I touched. So I was making incisions just large enough for my hand and for the instruments that I needed to use. And so, therefore, with their retraction, with my instruments in place and my hand in place, the med students couldn't see much. So they'd be like, oh, we don't want to scrub in with her. We can't really see a whole bunch, et cetera. And, you know, it was okay. It was all right because my dedication was, why do I need to make a gaping hole on the patient for everybody to see when that's not what the patient came for? The patient came to get relief for a resolution of the problem. And when I finally recognized that, hey, I finally got it, that over 95% of the surgery I was doing, Dr. Moore, wasn't even necessary.
Right.
So I had to come to grips with the fact that, you know, that career as a physical surgeon was over. And I said that if I was going to do any type of surgery at all, ever again, it would be trauma surgery. I mean, because obviously, unless you can really work with a psychosurgeon, you need somebody to sew your finger, your arm on, or, you know, put the top of your head back on, et cetera. But after that, see, then they need to go to you. Because we know there are states of consciousness that will provoke situations that keep a person putting themselves in situations where their body is hurt, don't we?
Yes, and we are at the top of the hour, so we might want to
ask. Okay, good.
Are there any questions before the time runs out?
Well, are there any questions before the time runs out? Everyone, you know that you're listening to the Jewel Network, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. This is the Melanology Show. I'm Dr. Jewel, the host, and your co-host, Dr. T. Owens Moore. Do we have questions?
Yes, we do have a couple of questions in the chat room.
Okay.
And one of the questions, someone wanted to know what was the difference between hue melanated and pheomelanated.
Dr. Moore.
Well, I believe that was pronounced right. EU, EU melanin. Is that correct, Rashika?
U melanin versus pheomelanin.
And the other one was spelled P-H-E-O?
Yeah.
Pheo, all right. It's just the actual color of the pigment. Because basically melanin is just pigment, but EU, the one with the EU, is like the brown or the darker pigment. If you see pheomelanin, it's like red, a lighter tint. So those who are red head or have red freckles, that's pheomelanin. So it's just a different tint to the melanin.
Okay.
Okay.
I just
want to let them know also, too, Dr. Moore, that it's because of the amino acid cysteine.
Okay. To be specific. That's why I didn't get the difference. Yes, but it's the tint. And the actual elements that make the chemical, yes, cause to be different.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Moore, now check this out. I'm looking at the chat room just quickly, and someone's saying that you can bleach your skin using curry powder. Have you heard anything about that? How does that work?
Externally or internally, did they express that?
No, they said, you know, some people are using curry powder to bleach their skin. How can this be?
Well, I know nothing about it, but we know in the Indian culture, they have issues with pigment, and they also eat a lot of curry. I don't know if it comes from that tradition of them using it in that capacity. But if you look at curry, it also functions as an antioxidant, and it can function to preserve cells. That's internally, though, because we know about it being used for, you know, Alzheimer's research as a natural product. Of course, the system won't support that because it's something natural, and they're not going to make money off of that. So internally, it's affecting the cells. Externally, I've never heard of that before, but there could be some science to it because it is a natural antioxidant.
Okay. So antioxidants, would they increase melatonin, which means that they would get lighter because of the increase in melatonin, or it's another mechanism?
If you ever cook with curry, it stains everything. It's there.
Yeah.
So I couldn't imagine lightening. If it, anything, it's just maybe changing the shade and the tone, but if anything, it's adding more pigment because it is a pigmented spice. So I'm not quite sure. Yeah, what the person's saying about people use it in that capacity, but as a substance, it is an antioxidant. Curcumin, turmeric, curry, all those spices like that are very important. That's why you see in Indian cultures they don't suffer from any of these neurodegenerative disorders because they have a lot of that in their food.
Mm-hmm. So now, so you're saying that if you were, you melanated, say you were nice chocolate brown, okay, and you rub curry on your skin, that's going to take you to looking caramel and color?
Oh, I can't say that. I've never done it, and I've never heard it. I'm just saying if you cook with it, you see it on everything you cooked, the spoon, the plate, the bowl, it stains. So if you see a staining chemical like that with something you're cooking with, internally it's also staining your insides, but it's staining insides to help out as an antioxidant. On the outside of the body, I'm just saying I don't know what it would do. I mean, is it pasted on? Is it put in water? I have no clue about how that would work, so I can't comment on that.
Okay. Well, we may just do a little research and see how that works. So in closing, though, two things. I do want you to give us a summary of melatonin-serotonin relationship, but since you asked the question about the master, I call him a, what do you call that? The capacity of melanin to continuously conduct, like a superconductor. Since the gentleman was a superconductor, obviously, and he was very heavily melanated also. So what did you think about the superconductor in the Green Mile?
Well, it's the issue of energy. I mean, most people don't talk about just people being energy, because people can drain your energy. People can pump up your energy. Why? Because we're nothing but energy. I tried to break it down earlier, talking about light with the pen, paper, with the chair, any element. All they are is different vibrations of energy. And the most dense ones are the ones that are physical in form. The lightest ones then go to the level of spirituality. So he was at a level where he was able to control within his system this power that we all have, but it was just manifested in him at a higher level. It's deep that if you look at the movie Avatar, and they got this chemical called unobtainium. If you looked at the molecule when it had in this little box or this little holding place, it was just floating. That's what semiconductor technology does. That's what makes trains and pretty much trains, if you talk about moving fast, it helps to reduce that friction to make things go and flow faster.
If you rubbed your hands, it traded the electromagnetic field, the magnetic field, really. Primarily magnetic field.
So it's just interesting that this chemical that they're talking about that they're seeking, that they need, was really a semiconductive kind of property because it was just floating there right in front of you. And if you take your hands and you rub them together really, really, really fast, and keep on rubbing them, what does it generate? Heat. That's friction.
Right.
So that heat, that friction, can what blow things up sometimes. You know, so you have to have an opportunity for it to be moving in a semiconductive capacity with an element that can control that. And what controls that? Melanin. It has semiconductive properties. It has phonon electron coupling properties. It can transform energy from one form to another. So that movie just showed a person that had it heightened in their system.
Exactly. Well, I love it. And that's what's so great about being able to know these intricate aspects of your body, and the Jewel Network definitely wants to support you to know so that when you are entertained by these kind of phenomena, you will really find it intriguing because you understand the systems, the energy, the mechanisms of how energy is moving, how that is at play, and that makes these movies even more marvelous to watch. So we have another seer who's going to be joining us tomorrow at 8 o'clock, Sophia Stewart. She is mom, the mother, the matrix, and she will be on the air at 8 p.m. and every week thereafter, and she's telling us a lot about what's coming up with her new production, The Matrix 4. So please join in. So can you give us a summary, Dr. T, on serotonin and melatonin? And then if there's any questions, we will take the questions before the end of the show. We've got maybe about 20 minutes, Dr. T.
Okay. Well, there's something up in the sky called the sun. It's in our, we're in the solar system. The sun brightens up and shines, and it emits energy to provide life in many aspects of the universe. Different forms, different ways, different structures, but it provides life. We live on planet Earth. Earth rotates, right?
Yep.
Earth, it actually rotates on a 23-degree axis, 23-degree tilt. It revolves around the sun. We have a moon on for our Earth in our orbit. It revolves around the Earth. All these rotations, all these revolving elements create cycles. So with the cycles externally out there in the real world on a galactic level, our bodies then have cycles. And our bodies respond to those cycles via elements inside. So we have a biological rhythm that's on a 24-hour clock because the Earth rotates on a 24-hour cycle. So as it rotates, the body then has elements that are responding to that. So in the daytime, you have a chemical release from a organ in your brain that responds to light. Not your two eyeballs, but the third eye, deep within the recesses of your middle part of your brain. So in the daytime, that pineal gland, which is responding to light, kicks in serotonin. Serotonin is a chemical that's known as a neurotransmitter, first found in the blood to help out with constriction of blood vessels, dilate blood vessels, control blood vessel vasoconstriction. So that's where we first found out about it, but we also noticed that, hey, it's in the brain, it's serving more of a purpose to affect moods. Well, we noticed that serotonin also makes melatonin. It's converted into melatonin. With the circadian rhythm that we have, guess what? At nighttime, melatonin kicks in. So melatonin has a structure very similar to serotonin, but a little bit different. It then turns into a chemical that functions at nighttime. And if you looked at the structure of melatonin, it may look just like the phenylenes, beta-carbolines, other chemical elements that are associated with psychoactive thinking. So the serotonin and the melatonin are responsive to the circadian rhythms that are in our environment, and any imbalance in that is going to cause a problem in the way the person can function. Those who have a disease called, or disorder called, seasonal affective disorder, they have it because during the seasonal changes, specifically during the wintertime, they may suffer from something called winter depression because the sun is no longer shining as much anymore. So their bodies are not adjusting properly to that, therefore they become affected. So we see, again, our bodies are greatly in tune with the environment, and any imbalance is going to cause a problem. What is the intermediary compound that we've been talking about on the Melanology Hour? Melanin.
Right.
It becomes then the intermediary substance that helps to provide balance with those chemical elements. So in the brain, you have melanated neurons, melanated brain structures. If they become demelanated and no longer work, they don't make the chemicals that are needed, and they also, those cells become destroyed. Not a good thing. So the melanin on the inside of the body then helps out to release some of these chemicals and also, guess what, retain and absorb them. That's a very important concept because as a black substance, specifically with the heat that we have all over the planet now, it absorbs heat. So we have to look at maybe new different technology to maybe look at ways to reduce heat, like maybe paint the streets white, paint the roof of your house white, do different things to adapt to the intensity of the sun that is hitting our world right now. But in general, those chemicals that are in our body are responding to the way that the environment changes and to keep us in tune with the world we live in.
Well, wonderful. Thank you.
Okay.
Do you have any questions, World?
We had a question. Someone wanted to know about sunlight. What kind of bulb should they have in their house? in relationship to serotonin?
Good question. What kind of light they should have in their house in reference to serotonin? Well, Dr. Jewel, you and I have talked about this before, about fluorescent light. Not a good form of light because it flickers and can cause some different sensations in terms of how the brain operates. Most people use incandescent light that, you know, shines kind of full without having a, flickering form and doesn't interfere with a person's brain activity. But full spectrum light, a certain kind of lux, L-U-X, is the measurement for light. If you do research on a certain light that are out there that are full spectrum, they can provide a better, grounding for the way the person's brain can adapt to this natural surroundings. People who have actually seasonal affective disorder, which I just talked about, the treatment for them is to give them additional light in the morning time, like maybe 3 or 4 in the morning, give them additional lux. And the measurement is like 2,400 or 2,500 lux that they would give for a person with seasonal affective disorder. So if you're actually looking at light bulbs for your house, you know, certainly eliminate those fluorescent lights. But look at lighting magazines, or just go to a store that talks about full spectrum light.
Right. Yeah, I entered that in your behalf, Doc, into the chat room here. And also too, they have a long tube light that is full spectrum also. So it looks like fluorescent light, but it's really a tubular full spectrum light, and you can use that to replace fluorescent light bulbs and those type of fluorescent sockets.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's another question that came up. Is light from the computer okay? And the answer is no. Okay, especially from the old terminals. With the LCD terminals, we don't have near as many problems as we had when they still used the tube-type video display unit. So the lead crystal screens now are much, much safer, because there was a point in time where there was a serious problem with infertility, Dr. Moore, with women that sat in front of those video display units, that we found that the rays that were coming from that unit increased the incidence of premature birth. You know, a large population, almost 35% of these women that worked in front of those terminals every day, they would automatically have premature births. They would put them into labor seven and a half months.
Well,
and we found that women who were in their first trimester of pregnancy, there seemed to be an increase in spontaneous abortions, that they would have miscarriages within the first 12 to 16 weeks, much higher incidence. So at one point, I was really cautioning many of my women to literally buy lead aprons, a lead apron such as the X-ray technician would wear, if they really felt that, you know, the job would not support them in moving them from that particular job, or that the job would not support them in getting those screens. They have screens that used to go over the terminal, where the screen, when you plugged it into an electric socket, would actually defer and alter the frequency of the rays that were coming from that video display unit. So now with the LCD screens again, we don't have near the problems that we had before. So it's much better to get the LCD screen now, much more healthier. Same thing with the TV sets. TV sets, color TV sets, cause a lot of problems. They knew for a fact that the lower one-third of a color cathode screen TV would give off so much radiation that it actually, in some children, set up a seizure formation. So that's one of the reasons why they always caution that the children should sit far back, at least somewhere between 10 to 15 feet away from a color cathode TV set, because of the radiation was just so intense, the EMC, the EMS. So the EMR? EMR, yeah. So therefore now with the LCD screens, it is much safer. But I'm looking very, very closely at HD. There's something that's not right about HD, Dr. Moore.
Yeah, I don't have it, so I don't know. I mean, you answered that question to the person by saying no. I would have said absolutely no. For me, the reason why I fake like I wear glasses is because of that computer screen. Back in the 80s, using that Macintosh, when it first came out,
exactly.
Working on that for my research and my degree in graphics and word processing and statistics, and I got up, I could see 6 feet in front of me. And I know it was the radiation that destroyed my lens.
That's right.
But I didn't wear glasses after that. I got a prescription, but I didn't want to weaken my eyes by wearing glasses. So I used muscle techniques to kind of, you know, make sure I strengthen the muscles that would make my lens work properly. So lens is what's being destroyed by that radiation. I mean,
that's deep.
When you talk about what's going on today with kids now, all these Blackberries and all these small items that y'all use. I think you're using that thing. People are going to be nearsighted when they get older because their eyes are hard to adjust after working with something so small and trying to see long term, less long distance. So people are going to be nearsighted by using those types of things. So the radiation is dangerous. And as you said about a lead blanket, when people go to the dentist and they go get that x-ray of that tooth, that reception, that nurse, that person who's there with you, they put a lead blanket on your body and they walk out the room.
Now I don't allow it. When I go, I'm like, get me the blanket too. You can run out and get me the blanket.
Give me your blanket. But they put the blanket.
I ask for it. I mean, they don't give it to you. It's only one dentist that I know of, and I try not to go to many. Okay, she was, you know, methodical enough and, you know, compassionate enough to make sure that the patient as well as the technician had lead protective shields on when X-rays were taken. But most of the time, it's only the technician that gets the lead shield, and you're left in the room to have to deal with whatever. So you have to ask for it if they don't do it as a natural courtesy. You have to ask that, you know, if you're going to have X-rays, that you want to have the lead blanket on. And so the most dental work that I've had was when I was definitely having children, and so I just couldn't even think about allowing myself to be exposed to X-ray knowing that I was still considering expanding my family. So you have to ask for it. And many of the parents, I recognize that even in the pediatric dentist office, do not demand that those children be protected, that their child be protected while they're having X-ray evaluations. Yep. It's very important, very important. And it's very interesting, too. This goes back to our earlier discussion this evening, Dr. Moore, where in science again, in research, do you know that at one point it was taught that because people had black skin that you should turn up the amount of voltage to take an X-ray with?
Wow.
I thought that was very interesting, but we have documentation that this was a standard taught to X-ray technicians and a standard taught in the radiology department. So we do know for a fact that, you know, melanin-dominant individuals do have more muscle mass. They do have 10 times the bone density than melanin-recessive individuals. And obviously then if you do need to have greater penetration because of the soft tissue density and because of the denseness of the bones, you want to definitely look at a fine line fracture, et cetera, you're not clear, you may have to increase the Rankin's, which is a measurement of the amount of radiation given for that. But, I mean, just as a standard, just, you know, you just look at them and then just turn up the dial. I mean, you know, that was just really a very ignorant technique that was, you know, promoted. And it may have definitely caused, you know, health problems to individuals if they had to have multiple X-rays. So, you know, it's important now that we do this work, we as scientists who care about life, in educating people about themselves so that people who may not have proper training that you may come in contact with, or, you know, I don't know what else could be the situation, but you can monitor them to make sure that they don't inadvertently harm you. This is very important, that your knowledge can protect you when you go through these institutions. And you should have the knowledge so that it is a counterbalance for them. Any more questions, dear engineer? And I want to thank you for engineering our show this evening. Thank you.
There's a question here. Is melanin composed of many pigments, as someone read it? Or they read that melanin was composed of many pigments.
How would you answer that, Dr. Jewel? Because I'm not quite sure how it's being asked.
Well, my response to that would be of sorts. That is to say that the melanin biopolymer is the most highly evolved pigment known to humanity. And the lesser pigments, such as lycopene, chlorophyll, these are more primitive or unevolved forms of melanin that have been labeled appropriately. But chlorophyll is definitely melanin, but it is working with light at a different frequency. Obviously, it specializes primarily in the visual light spectrum. And so the middle frequency in the visual light spectrum is green. And so that is its primary alignment with that particular frequency. But melanin works with the visual light spectrum, works with the sound wave spectrum, hertz. It works with laser, X-ray, UV, gamma rays, cosmic waves, etc. And as I've said in previous shows, because we have not activated the cytoskeletal system that allows us to be able to conduct frequencies of light outside of the visual spectrum, we don't tolerate these frequencies well. Not because we're not hardwired to do so. It is because the culture does not nurture and develop the brain so that we can handle these frequencies. The melanin will handle any frequency of light. However, it can only handle the frequencies that the brain has also been activated to handle. So it's just like a circuit box. You can put the circuit box onto the house that can handle all kind of voltage. But if you only hardwire the house for only a particular level of voltage, it doesn't matter about all the switches in the circuit breaker. So melanin is like your circuit breaker. It can handle all frequencies of light if the tissues have been hardwired for such. Our tissues have been hardwired for such, but not through consciousness. And so therefore, these exceptional frequencies have to be turned on by consciousness. The individual has to say, I can modulate and handle ultraviolet radiation. I can handle and modulate infrared, etc. And I think about this, Dr. Moore, when I make the statement, because I think of Madame Curie. And, you know, she died from the radiation exposure from the discovery that she made about uranium. Now, she was melanin recessive on the outside and obviously melanin dominant on the inside, like all human beings are. And I think about that. I said that, you know, if someone, perhaps obviously from the future, could have come and told her that, you know, to handle this substance requires you to change your consciousness about who you think you are. And if she had been able to do that, she would have not destroyed herself in making this discovery. But look at how we've used uranium. Isn't that interesting? That our awareness and now the power of uranium, we still have not evolved to recognize there are so many other things that can be done with uranium as opposed to making nuclear bombs. So yellow cake has tremendous potentials in many other areas for a evolved brain that understands the consciousness and the information in frequencies of light that are above or outside of the visual spectrum. And so uranium to a brain that can transmit UV light and understand and be a part of that, or X-ray or laser would handle and interact with uranium in a totally different way. It would not see it as a use of a weapon, because all things that are exposed to uranium that only have the capacity to deal with ultra-visual light spectrum will destroy themselves. So I just think it's so interesting that the more we are willing to learn about the brain and activate all of these different centers, or in my previous work known as circuits of the brain, what appears to be poisonous and toxic and to one person is totally a new revolutionary entity that can be used to do incredible things. And so this is how I would answer that question here, is that there are many pigments, but none of them are as highly evolved as melanin. Melanin is the pigment. She would be like, grand, great, great matriarch of pigments.
Beautiful, black, indestructible, and I will be back next week.
Yeah, it's that time, isn't it? Well, thank you so much, and please tune in tomorrow at 8 o'clock for Mom, the Mother of the Matrix, Miss Sophia Stewart. It's her maiden voyage and beginning her first series of broadcasts from the Jewel Network, hosted by Blog Talk Radio. See you tomorrow. Tomorrow. Bye-bye. Thanks, Dr. Moore. Love you. Thank you, engineer. Bye-bye.
This broadcast is under full copyright and trademark protection owned by the House of Jewels. This broadcast in its entirety, nor any part of this broadcast, can be reproduced, copied, transcribed, placed in podcast format, placed into MP3 format, or suspended on any internet digital location without express permission from the House of Jewels, Washington State, USA. To reproduce or suspend this broadcast in any digital location other than the Jewel Network is prohibited, and legal proceedings will follow accordingly. Thank you for listening.